Good morning. This is Bishop Phoebe Rofe of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. Each Thursday morning, we broadcast live from Crosstown Concourse in Memphis, over 91.7 FM WYXR. This is an opportunity for us to speak with a guest to learn more about the role of faith in their life and their ministry. And every Thursday morning on Faithfully Memphis, we start with a saint of the day. And so October the 7th, on our calendar of either lesser feasts and fasts or holy men and holy women, I think we have a couple of names for the saints on our liturgical calendar in the Episcopal Church. October the 7th is the feast day of Bridget of Sweden, a really interesting woman that I did not know much about. She came from a noble Swedish family. She was born in around the year 1300. And as a child, she really believed that God was calling her to a religious vocation. But unfortunately, when she was 13, she was married against her will to a member of the Swedish nobility. I think this sort of notion of women and girls not having agency is something that we're definitely going to pick up on in our conversation with our special guest today. And so she was a married woman, a wife, a mother, ultimately of 8 children. When her husband was away on business, she was able to structure her life in a way that gave her a sense of fulfillment, focused on God. And of course, when her husband was in the home, she had to keep a lot of that personal relationship with God to do it in secret. And she had visions. She was a mystic. And the visions included visions of Mary, the mother of Jesus, of Jesus himself and other saints who spoke to her in Swedish. In her visions, she heard these important religious speakers conversing with her in Swedish, and she would write these messages down and share them with her confessor. And over time, she became critical of the king of Sweden. Again, because her commitment to God and her faith gave her a worldview which was a little out of step with what was happening. Her husband died in the year 1344, and at that point, her life really changed because she was able to completely devote herself to her religious life, and she actually founded an order. But it wasn't just any order. Her monastery had a women's cloister next to a men's cloister with a shared church in between. And in the church, the monks, the nuns, and the lay people prayed together. Again, revolutionary in the 14th century, for her to design this order that was all about the equality of men and women, the equality of lay people and those who were set apart for religious life. And actually, the abbess, a woman, was in charge. So she traveled to Rome to get the approval of the Pope. And in the year 1370, the Pope did approve it, and her daughter, Catherine, ended up being the first abbess of this order. So Bridget ended up spending the rest of her life in Rome. She ministered to everybody. to rich and poor, male and female. She provided refuge for the homeless and lived her Christian values day in and day out. She traveled to Jerusalem in the year 1373, and returning home, she became ill, and she died in July of 1373. And so I think about this woman whose life really started off in one direction, forced into a marriage, forced into motherhood, and yet still being faithful to God as she understood that relationship. And then finally, when her husband died, having the freedom to structure her life, during which time she created a radical community of profound equality based upon her understanding that all of us are equal in God's sight. And so we give thanks for the life of Bridget of Sweden, for her faithfulness, for her courage, for her persistence in living a life that was pleasing to God.
Won't you come to our birthday party? Celebrate all the memories, music, and more on Thursday, October 5th from 5 to 7 p.m., where we'll be pumping up the tunes and good times right outside our studio in Crosstown Concourse. We want to see you in person and tell you thanks for listening, sharing, and donating to help us grow year after year.
More info at birthday.wyxr.org.
So we are back on the air, and it is definitely my honor to introduce our special guest. She is certainly known to parishioners in the Diocese of West Tennessee and beyond, but to any listeners who are not familiar with the Reverend Becca Stevens, she is herself an incredible visionary, Episcopal priest, author, entrepreneur, and not only the chaplain at Vanderbilt University, the Episcopal chaplaincy there, but also as the founder and president, or Becca, you probably need to remind me of your current title at Thistle Farms.
Founder and president is right.
Got it. Founder and president of Thistle Farms, an amazing social justice enterprise dedicated to supporting women who have really struggled through human trafficking and other forms of life-altering circumstances. And I think I'm just going to stop there because I really want to hear from Becca. Becca, good morning and welcome to Faithfully Memphis.
Good morning, Bishop. It is so nice to see you.
I know. So Becca and I recently returned from an amazing trip, and we are going to get to that. But first, we normally start the program, Becca, by inviting the guest to share a little bit about the role of faith in their lives. And I know, you know, your father was an Episcopal priest, and you were formed in the church. Any sort of reflections about how all of this amazing ministry that you have been engaged in and are engaged in has been influenced by your relationship with God?
Absolutely. That, you know, my dad was a priest, but he was killed when I was 5 years old by a drunk driver.
Mm-hmm.
So our lives of faith, this kind of, my mom was 35 years old with five kids.
Mm.
It was kind of all turned upside down by that tragedy. And I think it was a tragedy that really defined how we were going to live out our faith, and the idea that, you know, God is love and God is with you in the good and bad became part of my mom, you know, my understanding of mm-hmm. who God is. And that, you know, the way that that goodness and that love is expressed is in community.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the community that rallied around us. It was the community you know, of a really broken church that continued to do abusive things in my life. It was a community that my mom found her home in a, she ran the whole community center for the Diocese of Tennessee called St. Luke's for years.
Wow.
So it was this understanding of God is love, and that love is best expressed in safe community.
Safe.
That really influenced my life.
Yeah, yeah. And so years later, you are an Episcopal priest, and you're in Nashville. And as I've heard you tell the story, you notice things. Things got your attention, maybe that other people had missed. What was it that you noticed that sort of drew you into this amazing ministry that has, that God has multiplied over and over and over again?
I think I noticed, first of all, you know, I was in divinity school at Vanderbilt, and I noticed that, like, people are coming to a lot of places for a lot of little things. Like, you come in and you're asking for a pair of socks or a bus ticket, because that's where I was doing my ministry. And I'm like, if you need a pair of socks, you need everything else. And then I noticed that basically, you know, most of the programs were really designed around men. And I knew that if I was on the street or just coming out of prison, that I need a safety again was my first thing, like, because there were so many places I wasn't safe. And so it felt like to me there wasn't safety. So, you know, my whole idea was building a beautiful home that was completely safe just for women. And then I figured nobody had any money. If you don't have enough money to buy a pair of socks, you're not going to be able to pay rent. So if I was going to ask somebody to pay rent, I was just asking them to go hustle, right?
Right.
So it was just in my mind, like, oh, I know what we need. We need a long-term free home just for women with no authority being in the house. And for those of us who have survived sexual abuse as kids, authority is seriously one of the worst triggers there is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I got to figure out my way around it or manipulate it or cry or hate. There's all these emotions around it. And it's like, so let's just get rid of it. Let's just be a community. Again, safe community. So that's how it was designed. And honestly, when you were reading about Bridget, it's like, you know, this model of radical hospitality in monasteries.
Yep.
That see equality. That's what this is. It's old school.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Sometimes there's nothing new under the sun, right? So just.
And, but we have to learn it. Like some of these old, old traditions of hospitality and community, the oldest entities the world knows for healings. You can practice it 1,000 years, but if it skips a generation, we forget about it and we think it has to just be clinical or it just has to be treatment. And it's like you forget the important role of just, you know, what the elders taught us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it always takes a village. And I dare say, Becca, you would say as the founder and president of Thistle Farms, and I would certainly say as bishop of an Episcopal diocese, that there are many, many people that we partner with and collaborate with. Sometimes we're the ones sort of standing up front and there's a whole lot of other folks surrounding us. But I, as I think about the trajectory of what started off as your desire out of your own pain and brokenness to support other folks, that first was a safe space to live, to be able to get clean from drugs and alcohol. And then the notion of, well, let's be able to work, and the women not being able to work, which sort of led you into the social enterprise project. And then years later thinking, wow, the abuse of women, unfortunately, happens everywhere. And how can we support on a global scale women who are in tough circumstances around the world? I mean, did you ever envision all of this, or has it sort of been one decision after the other?
Boy, all that you said so much just then, and I want to say that it does take a village to raise a leader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a community of people, and you're right about just making sure you remember your role sometimes is to speak it and to stand up there, but it is not your role to claim that this is your thing.
Right.
This is a communal vision. It's a communal thing. And I think I did think it was a big idea to love the world.
Didn't yeah.
You mean, and so you just say yes because you believe in that vision to love the world, and it happens maybe in small ways over a lifetime. But when you start looking, it's like, oh, yeah, all these pieces came together to create a global community.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking about, you know, saying yes when you said yes to Nepal.
Yes.
I know we're going to talk about that
yes.
later.
Uh-huh.
I really felt like when you were describing Bridget, you were describing some of the first women we met at Blessed Hope
yes.
who were married way too young.
Yes.
And when they finally, you know, their husbands who had been Sherpas, they said, who never returned home, they yes. found each other and created in many ways, you know, a convent of women who come together and create economic freedom and raise their children together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe there's just something innate, even going back before Bridget, you know, you think about Mary Magdalene and the women at the foot of the cross. I mean, women, we have been supporting one another for millennia. And I know sometimes we can get catty and things can get tense, but, you know, I couldn't make it without all of the sisters in my life, biological and otherwise. Literally, I couldn't make it. And so it's good to know that you and I are just in this long river of women loving and supporting one another. And we're going to pass it on to the next generation as well.
I hope so. And I hope that, you know, justice was never intended to be a competition.
Yes.
And love is not a competition. There's plenty of both if we yeah. can tap into it. And I just know that we can't tap into it unless we are together.
Yeah. Yeah. So Becca and I were together last summer, I believe, or the summer of, you know, Becca, with COVID, my brain is screwed up. The summer of 2022 at the Tennessee Layman's Conference. And she was literally leaving Sewanee to get on a plane to go to Poland to meet with Ukrainian refugee women. And we sort of embraced and wanted to find ways to collaborate. And then later that fall, she invited me to join a couple of other persons and her husband on a trip to Nepal to meet with women in several cooperatives there, to hear their stories, to tour the places where they were making jewelry, baskets, and clothing, and to consider how Thistle Farms might support those ministries. It was an amazing journey that I'm still processing, Becca, and unpacking. I don't know about you, but there was such a richness and a depth, even though it was a short time, of what we experienced that was very powerful and profound for me.
Absolutely. And the way that my husband says it, Marcus Hummond, he says, I left Nepal, but Nepal didn't leave me.
Yes, 100%.
That he can still see the colors and he can still hear the voices and hear the songs and see the crazy monkeys or whatever it is dancing in your head. But what I really took from it, the word that I embraced and have taken from it that I hope is helpful to one person maybe listening today, you know, we had a beautiful guide, Anita,
yes.
who took us around and reminded us of the Gandhian idea that it was introduced into the world of ahimsa. Ahimsa, the soul force,
mm-hmm.
and it's love in all its power. And I came home and I've been reading the Gospels, and every Gospel story is Jesus explaining the idea of how we can be church,
mm-hmm.
these disciples can be church together. and embracing this idea of ahimsa. And it came to the U.S. through, again, another mystic like Bridget, but Dr. Howard Thurman,
yes,
who was really the grandfather of the civil rights movement, who writes about this idea of love not being just a spiritual or interpersonal thing, but this really soul force for life, for community, and the beloved community specifically. And he had a huge influence on Dr. Martin Luther King as well. And so I've been seeing, like, oh my gosh, these are the concepts Jesus was talking about to his church then, mm-hmm. his little tiny church. He was saying, you have to be generous, fruitful, forgiving, powerful, all these things that we need to be doing about love. So what I've carried home with me mm-hmm. is like just expanding my understanding of what love looks like in a daily practice.
Absolutely.
I want to hear what you're bringing, what some of the ideas are floating in your mind.
You
so
know,
much.
So when we were there, the initial reaction that I had, which I believe I shared, was the interconnectedness. Mm. I was struck by seeing all of the temples everywhere, large temples, small temples, in business neighborhoods, residential areas, and people stopping on the way to work or during a break. It was almost seamless to me, Becca. And then to be sort of present as at a Hindu temple, bodies were being prepared for cremation out in the open. And as someone not connected to the family, I mean, it wasn't done in a building, the seamlessness of all of that. And it's just got me reflecting not only about our congregations in West Tennessee and how we might be more interconnected, but similar to your comments, how can I, within myself, right, within Phoebe, have everything be more integrated and less, all right, here's the time for worship and here's the time for this. God is in all of it. And sometimes I have compartmentalized things in ways that aren't helpful. So I'm just really giving some thought to what does a more integrated life with Jesus look like for me?
That is beautiful. And I think what I'm taking away from that for me too is like, when you say integrated, I'm reminded that it's about all five of my senses. So integrated into my eating, integrated, and that's what they were all about. Integrated into my smelling.
Yes.
Integrated into my touch, not just in my mind and my prayers, but like, you know, what clothes do I put on my body?
Yep.
What is the greeting I give someone in my words? Like, mm-hmm. that's the thing. Everybody was like, you know, they would just put their hands on their forehead, namaste to you.
Yes, yes.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. The other thing that struck me, and, you know, we talked about this, and I love our brothers, you know, we need them. But we did, Becca, I think, have a really strikingly different experience of hospitality. Not that there was no hospitality, but the hospitality that we received when a group of men greeted us. And I would say within that system, men with power, men with privilege, men with access to resources, and these groups of women who probably, from a material sense, had almost nothing. I was so humbled by how we were received, Becca, by these women.
Totally concur. And I think, you know, it was unbelievable to me that, like, the cake that first group made with an American airplane
yes.
on it, with a flag.
Yes.
And it was like, I wouldn't even know how to draw the Nepalese flag.
Right. Let alone do all of that.
Oh my gosh. Unbelievable.
And the presence, you know, the like the apron type of garment that we received, the beautiful sheer, layer after layer of almost stoles. I mean, I kind of felt like they were just draping me with stoles, the jewelry, and then beyond that, the sharing of their stories, right? The vulnerability. They didn't know us, and yet they shared their journey. They told us about their dreams, but also their struggles. I find sometimes that in my travels in other parts of the world, and I think we've both been very blessed and privileged to travel internationally, it's often the people with the most minimal material resources who are my greatest teachers. Because
gosh, yes,
their posture towards life.
The other thing that they did when we got there, Bishop, I know that it was, it all happened super fast, but when we came in the door, they were singing. This isn't our first place.
Yes.
If anybody wants to look it up. But when we came in, you had to bend down because the indigenous women that greeted us, nobody would even come close to your shoulder, Bishop.
No.
And we bent, you had to bend down, mm-hmm. and then they put a red dot, right?
Yes, on your forehead.
Eye, right where the idea of, you know, insight happens. And to me, it was like, you belong here. That's what they were saying.
Yeah.
And this sign of when you walk into our house, you belong. And I don't know what our signs are in the church or general, but it's like, what a beautiful thing to do to somebody to say, you're one of us. Welcome.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I don't know if you can get a star or something when you walk in somewhere. You know, I don't know what our system is, but I love that. And then the other thing that I have felt, at least, like I have zero bracelets left. They make these beautiful braided bracelets. And it was three women who started this program that came together. No one had any formal education, like Phoebe saying, great teachers. No formal education, all abandoned after being married young and widowed and having really no way to survive in this Himalayan area of Nepal. And they came to Kathmandu and they started this organization. So they started braiding these bracelets and I bet I bought 40 of them.
Yep.
And I realized that this is kind of like a little religious symbol for me now.
Yeah.
As it's like I can show and tell a story with this tiny bracelet. And also you're not making a huge commitment to give one away to somebody. And people love it when you give them something. People love to be given gifts. And so I think like one of the things I always want to do is make sure I have these bracelets to say, you belong. It's not a red dot, but it is, you know, something to say, thank you. I'm carrying the same story we've heard all over the world about for ages since Bridget about having to be, you know, too young to wed.
Yep.
And yet finding your voice and your strength to live out your calling.
Yeah. You know, I thought in that moment, Becca, when I received the red dot from the beautiful woman, you know, you and I are people who baptize. And we're people who have performed last rites. And I just thought, you know, that's the same place where I had the sign of the cross at my baptism, where I get it every Ash Wednesday.
Oh, my God!
And God willing, there will be someone to do that for me as I'm taking my last breath. What is it about that physical part of our body that is so meaningful in different cultures, right? Because we were in a Buddhist and a Hindu environment. We weren't in a Christian environment, and yet they were so reverent in touching that same spot on my forehead.
Yes. I think we ought to do a whole other topic
about
that. Between now and then, we should do some research.
We should.
That is such a deep, perfect question. I also want to say the women in Blessed Hope are Christian women practicing Buddhism.
Yes.
I think that is, Marcus is my husband again, who's come home. One of his takes is we need to he needs to really do those practicing mm-hmm. of some of those Buddhist traditions, more the Tibetan traditions that, you know, I mean, Thomas Merton went mm-hmm. that journey too, you know, a Christian monk, Catholic monk, who understood that, you know, you can be Christian and you can put a red dot on your forehead.
Absolutely. And that
it's
God
not covering
is
up the cross. Nope. It's a blessing.
Exactly. 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 Well, I'm just looking forward to, as I continue to process and as we think, Becca, about different ways of partnering, that I can try to remain open to how to support not just these women, but other women as well, to think about the privileges that I have and what they could accomplish with no formal education, like you said, no training. If they can do all of that, surely those of us who are blessed and privileged can do a little bit more. I think that's something else that I took away. What more can I do?
Well, I definitely took that away. But I also want to say, like, you know, part of the reason I really wanted you to go is because you are already doing all that. You embody this peaceful, graceful, feminine, powerful leadership to so many of us, and we look to you, and it was an honor to go to Nepal with you, but also any way that Thistle Farms or myself can support your voice as you keep going, just text me. I'll do anything for you, Phoebe.
Thank you, Becca. It just means so much, and we've been on a journey together, and you know, I don't think they're accidents, right? God brings people together. Right. Who knows where it's all going to lead?
Hey, we're going to definitely. Well, that's not our last trip.
No, it can't be our last trip. We had a lot of fun. We worked and we had fun. So I recently learned something new about you that I probably would have talked to you about when we were in Nepal. And that is that we've got some folks in West Tennessee that, again, are thinking about creation care, and how do we reverently take a body at the end of life and respectfully help it transition. And I've learned that you are involved in the green burial movement. Is this something that you are involved in? Is that a...
Yes. All my stories basically start with I was walking in the woods, Phoebe.
Yeah.
I need to say Bishop, I'm sorry.
No, say Phoebe.
No, we're on there. But I was walking in the woods in Percy Warner Park, and one of my friends who is a naturalist and landscape architect said, this is an area where slaves were buried.
Wow.
And I looked to the right, and it's down a wooded hill, and the pawpaw trees are growing, leaves in the fall. And you could see the indentations in the ground. And it was stunning, by the way. The same thing you're saying. Humbling, stunning.
Yeah.
A life-changing moment, all those things in this one little thing. And I was like, I hate how we bury people. I hate it. As a priest, I have not liked it. I mean, I don't like to bury money, first of all.
Yeah.
I don't believe in burying money.
Yep.
And all this rigmarole around fancy coffins that mm-hmm. you put in the ground is ridiculous. And it's super bad for the environment. All the embalming fluids, all the concrete, all the metal. It's horrible when I started reading about it. So I started a not-for-profit called Larkspur, if anybody wants to look it up. The executive director that has grown the program is John Christian. He's a funeral director. I mean, he has his license.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought 200 acres, and now we have over 900 acres. And basically the way it works is you can go on the Larkspur Conservation Cemetery spot, which is next to a state park with the best wildflowers in the world.
Mm.
You can bury people naturally for, like, you charge $4,000 for everything, all in.
Wow.
Open the grave, close the grave. And like 15-20% of that goes to invest in conserving land. So the whole 160 acres, all of it's under Tennessee conservation.
Mm-hmm.
So there is nobody will ever build on it. You bury on, you know, a very small portion of mm-hmm. that, and it funds buying the next 100 acres.
Wow. Wow.
It is stunning. I will take you out there.
I would love to see that. Yeah.
And now Larkspur is, because of John Christian and his team, we have an amazing reputation around the country, and people are coming to learn how do you start a conservation, or really we're saying traditional cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it is how before the Civil War, how you buried people. Mm-hmm. Nobody was embalmed. They just did that when they started embalming people when soldiers had to come back from the Civil War. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. And now they're saying like that's traditional. It's like, no, Jesus just got, you know,
wrapped
some
in a cloth. Yeah.
In a shroud. So we have beautiful shrouds and wicker coffins.
Wow.
That are made, handmade by women, mm-hmm. all of it Justice Enterprise. So from sourcing to final product, it's about, you know, supply chain, loving the earth, loving women. That's,
wow.
you know, it's about. Come see it. Well, next time you come, I'll show you the whole place.
Wow. So just through going through life, paying attention, and then I also imagine then stopping for a moment, right? Instead of rushing on to the next thing, when something catches your attention, it's like, okay, well, wait a minute. This could be a burning bush moment, right? I mean, God could be speaking to me in this moment, and then opening yourself up to that. I wonder, Becca, are there any particular practices or disciplines as you reflect back that have helped facilitate that in you? You know, is it something innate, or are there things that you've done to kind of put yourself in a posture of openness?
Well, I think, for everyone, discipline is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, people say I'm spiritual, but not religious.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I think when people say that is, well, you have no discipline.
Mm.
Because religion is discipline, right?
Yes.
That's what it means. And so everybody in the whole world is spiritual. I mean, where we breathe in our first breath, we are a spiritual being. But like, what is the discipline to hone that spiritual gift mm-hmm. of being alive? And for me, walking in the woods is my balm of Gilead. It is my burning bush, like you said, or it's my insight on my forehead.
Yes, yes.
It is that thing that gets me right there, somewhere between your sight and your thoughts and your heart, which I'm going to think about for days, by the way. Now that you've pointed this out,
yeah.
I'm just obsessed with that thought. But I always, like, I start the day in a bath quiet. I had 3 boys, and my husband and I both worked our whole lives. And so getting up before the sun and having some time in a bathtub was where I wrote, where I thought.
Mm.
But during the day, I always try to, at least most days, find time to walk, find time to use my oils. Y'all, if anybody wants to buy oils at Thistle Farms, we've been blending oils for 2 decades.
Yep.
Their oils, you know, essential oils have been a part of freeing up our mind and dotting our foreheads forever.
Yep.
And so I practice that. And then always, you know, say your prayers before bed, people. My
yep.
mama taught me that, and I will do that for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the last thought you should have before bed is God.
Yes. Wow, Becca, that's profound, because I just was hearing something yesterday on the news about this epidemic of young folks not being able to sleep. And they're thinking that it might be because of these computers that we carry with us all the time. And imagine the difference between the last thing you do being something on social media on your cell phone before you fall asleep versus just thinking and reflecting on the power of God before you go to sleep.
Mm, that's a good point. Yes,
yeah.
I agree.
Wow. Well, I just want to thank you, Becca, for your saying yes to being open and the decisions that you've made that probably were, you know, for you in a sense, that have ended up blessing so many other people. And I'm just excited about what your yeses of tomorrow are going to look like. I mean, think about your yeses of the past and where the Lord has taken them and how the Lord has used them. I can't even envision what the yeses of the future will be. And thank you for allowing us to just be a part of this journey with you.
Oh, it is my joy. And thank you for letting me be part of your journey and inviting me on this show this morning. Namaste.
Namaste.
Love, love. Thank you. Thank you, Bishop.
I encourage our listening audience, if you are not familiar with Becca and her work, to check out her website. The Thistle Farms website not only has information about that social enterprise initiative and ways in which we can support women from throughout the world who are working to be able to provide for their families, but there's also all kinds of information about Becca, the books that she's written, and all of the things that she is involved with. So today in Memphis, Tennessee, we are having our election. There are a number of persons running for office, a number of different things that we are voting on, including members of city council and the mayor. So if you have not yet voted, please do exercise your constitutional right and go and vote. You know, as a woman, I'm aware that people had to fight to give me the right to vote. As an African American, I'm aware that people had to fight so that I could have the right to vote. And so I take that right seriously. And our prayer book, which of course has prayers for all sorts of occasions, also includes a prayer for an election. So I would like to invite you to have a moment of prayer. Almighty God, to whom we must account for all our powers and privileges, guide the people of Memphis and Shelby County in the election of officials and representatives, that by faithful administration and wise laws, the rights of all may be protected and our community and our nation be enabled to fulfill your purposes. Amen. So thank you for listening to this edition of Faithfully Memphis. Just a reminder that you can hear this podcast anywhere you get your other podcasts, including Apple Music and Spotify. We encourage you to not only listen, but to subscribe and to give us comments and feedback. We are in the fall season, and so in the church world, this is a time when our programming is getting back up and running. Christian formation for all ages is up and running. So, you know, folks in our churches, lay and ordained, are staying busy and everything is in full swing. And so I hope that you have a faith community that you have found that you've been able to connect with. And if you haven't, and that's something that you are considering, I encourage you to perhaps visit our website. At the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, we have brief profiles of all of our congregations, and this may be a season for something new for you. I love this notion of that Becca Stevens reminded us that when we stop and pay attention, things can be revealed that we might otherwise miss in the midst of just the busyness of life. So until next week, friends, stay safe and stay positive.